Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 here in Chicago with a July 4th special. Yes, July 4th, a little bizarre falling out on a Tuesday, but yes, we are live here for a Monday Motivation of our July 4th weekend. And reminder, please share the podcast, subscribe yourself, like it, and share it. I think there are very important messages and fun messages that should be getting out to the Jewish world. So help me and partner with me in that. Thank you so much. All right. Well, anyone here in the Midwest, at least in Chicago, we survived Noah's flood over here today. Oh, my. Yes, lots of water and just kept coming. So I hope everyone in the Midwest is dry. All right. So here we go. A few things to talk about before we dig into a unique angle on this July 4th. I wanted to give a patriotic July 4th podcast, as well as something insightful, something unique. So I've decided to focus on the life of Chaim Salomon, and we are going to get that soon. But I think there's a few things that we need to keep in mind as Jews on July 4th. Okay. Now, for those of the faint of heart, please fasten your seatbelts. Any Jew who complains about America, I would ask you, I would beg you, I would implore you to open up any Jewish history book of any repute, anyone, and please compare the last 2,000 years of Jews in exile and tell me another land that has treated us even close to be better. You might say, oh, Spain. They did for a while. But as soon as 1391 came around and pogroms killing about 100,000 Jews and forced mass converting about another 300,000, that kind of wore out. England was okay till 1290, and they kicked us out. And that's all the Crusades, and Europe was a disaster. Okay, you'll say Germany. Well, actually, Germany was pretty good until 1933, and I need not say the rest. Tell me another spot. Tell me another place. Tell me another place where Jews can practice their Judaism freely. Tell me another place where we can make money, where we can buy kosher food, where we can go and pray. Tell me a place where we can have our own Jewish schools and not rely on what is being taught in the public schools. I'm speaking gently. Tell me a place where we can teach our values, where we can fulfill our Torah, where we can live like Jews. Tell me another place in the 2,000 years of our exile since we've been in our homeland that you could do that. And I could go on and on and on. And I'm trying to speak measured. But something irks me is when I see young Jews bashing America. Slicha, as we say in Hebrew, pardon moi. Please, please, whatever your political affiliations are, whatever your feelings are about America, if you would just broaden your lens and look through a Jewish lens as a Jew, you would be filled with gratitude for this great land called America. Now, that said, we have had many challenges here in America. There was much anti-Semitism and still anti-Semitism today. But in terms of our ability to function independently, unfettered, we have never had such an opportunity in exile. Only rivaled, again, by two other places, Spain, we know what happened there, and Germany, and we know what happened there. Okay, so think twice, my young Jews, who are quick to bash America and say America is so bad and so terrible. It's just not. Now, America poses, and we have spoken about this, at tremendous lengths at Money Motivation about the challenges that freedom gives us, that poses us, is that because we are free for the first time in many, many, many years and even centuries, we have the challenge of staying true to our Judaism and not melting in the melting pot of America. Now, that is a serious challenge. That is a major challenge. And most of the Jewish world, unfortunately, is not living up to that challenge at an assimilation rate of 70 to 80%. So spiritually, this does not mean that America has not challenged the Jews, because it has. And unfortunately, en masse, the overall numbers, we are failing. However, that's not America's fault. That's our fault. That's us not giving our children a compelling Jewish education. That's us not role modeling. It's us not loving being Jewish so much that it permeates our home and our work environments. And when we walk in the streets and we go about our day and people say, wow, that's a Jew and he's so happy and she's so happy to be Jewish, and our children sense that. Okay, that's not America's problem. That's our problem. And today, unfortunately, many Jews don't know enough why they should be so ecstatically elated to be Jewish. Well, that's one of the reasons why we have this podcast and why we have Project 613, is to teach people how awesome it is to be Jewish. We should wake up every day, and we do in the morning blessings. We thank the Almighty for making us Jewish and for giving us these special gifts. Asher bachar banu mikol amim. Hashem, you've chosen us from all of the nations and given us the Torah. Asher bachar banu mikol amim. Venosan lanu es Torah semes. And you've given us a true Torah. And if you look at the morality that's going around today, what is the basis for all of that morality? What are they basing all of the confusion about? Confusion, shall I say it? Confusion about gender? Confusion about morality? Should we have a police force? Are you kidding me? There's so much that is wrong, and the forces of evil are infiltrating our great, great, great nation. But let us not lose sight on the gift of what America has been. It has given us an opportunity to fight in the world for our self-determination without a hand or both hands tied behind our backs. And for that, we must be grateful. And yet, as we said, that challenge of freedom is a tremendous one, and a battle that I wish more people would join me in, fighting on the front lines, and even not on the front lines, in the back lines, whatever line you want to be on, to ensure that the next generation, the current and future generations, will love being Jewish and know why, and not just going through the motions. All right, so I think that is a very, very powerful introduction, first segment, I should say, of the podcast today, and something that we should appreciate on July 4th. Okay, I think there is another idea that I'd like to share, and then we'll go into the incredible life of the incredible Jew and American patriot of Chaim Salman. And I think that's one today of victimhood. It is very in vogue to be a victim today. It is very in vogue to have play the victim card. And I think that the greatness of what America represents is the Jewish values of not playing the victim, of the whatever we face in life, the challenges we face in life, we are not victims of our environment. Those are the challenges that we are supposed to overcome to become truly great. And therefore, we're not entitled to anything. We're not entitled. No one owes us anything. We, on the flip side, have the obligation to use whatever privileges we have to the full extent. And so therefore, the word privilege is a dirty word in secular culture today. But it's not a dirty word in the world of Torah. Because the more privilege one has, the greater responsibility one has to do good with that. That is the Jewish approach to privilege. We are not vilified. We cannot vilify people because they have privilege. The question is, how do you use that privilege to make the world a better place? The book that I often quote, the Chovos Levavos, the entire book is called The Duties of the Heart. And he says, the more that Hashem does for us, the greater our obligation is to serve him and to help others in this world. And what better lesson on a July 4th, the freedom that we've been given. There's no crusades and no Cossacks and no Nazis and no barbed wire, no German shepherds and no Zyklon B and no ghettos, and I could keep going, and no inquisitions and inquisitors. We have the privilege of freedom, and we should rejoice in it. And the way we rejoice in the privilege of freedom is by recognizing that it is our responsibility to make our country, ourselves, and the world better because of that privilege. All right, here we go. Now that I got those things off my chest, we could turn to the incredible life of Chaim Salman. Now, before we begin this, I would like to give a shout out to a dear friend of mine, Rabbi Menachem Levine, who is a rabbi, historian, author, and CEO of JDBY and YTT. JDBY is the girls' school, and YTT is the boys' school here in Chicago, one of them, the main one, and our daughters have all gone to JDBY, and he is an amazing rabbi, and really just a very, very, very special person. His website is thinktorah.org, and really, really, really special in terms of what he has done for the world and for certainly for the Chicago community. All right, so he wrote an amazing, amazing article about Chaim Salman. Now, before we begin, how many people have heard of Chaim Salman? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? Okay. Hamevin Yavin on that reference, a secular reference. Okay, so who's heard of Chaim Salman? Well, if you have not heard of Chaim Salman, now on this Money Motivation podcast, we are going to find out about him. And it's based on an article from Rabbi Menachem Levine on thinktorah.org. And it is post it on LinkedIn, etc. Okay, so who is this Chaim Salman? He was born in Lissa, Poland in 1740 to a family descended from Spanish and Portuguese Jews who had immigrated to Poland following the Spanish Inquisition and expulsion. What amazing continuation of the podcast we had before about Spain and the ripple effects that that expulsion had. So they stayed Jews. Again, continuing the theme, they stayed Jewish. They didn't convert. These are the people, and you'll see his Jewish identity comes through again and again. Okay, so Poland was not so safe, and therefore he fled to Holland because there were pogroms in Poland. And basically, throughout his travels, he learned a ton of languages, including German, and he acquired the knowledge of finance. Yes, money, 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 money. He was a great businessman and financier. He goes back to Poland for a little bit and then realizes it's untenable. He goes to England and then finds his way to New York. Okay, New York, he married Rachel, who was the daughter of Moses B. Franks. Okay, and she was the sister of Colonel Isaac Franks, who was already a revolutionary officer of distinction, and also the other brother, Mayor Isaac Franks, who was a judge of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. So you see, Jews are already making incredible inroads in a colonial continental America. Okay, so basically what he did is he decided to join the revolution. He joined the New York branch of the Sons of Liberty. Okay, he was arrested as a spy. Now, New York was controlled by Britain at the time. He was arrested as a spy, and then basically, Britain kept him for 18 months on a British ship to be an interpreter for the Hessian soldiers. These were the European soldiers who were there, the German soldiers who were on the British side. And basically, what he did was, on the ship, he tried to convince the Hessians that they should actually not fight for the British. Okay, and eventually, he was able to bribe his way off the ship and get back to fight. Now, he moved to Philadelphia, which was a stronghold of the colonists, and he became a financier. He borrowed money and basically became the main moneylender and financier of personally for the colonial army officers and the Continental Congress itself. We'll see what it's really absolutely unbelievable. Okay, what happened over here? So now, let's get to the American Revolutionary War. Okay, so by 1781, the revolutionary cause, that's us, by the way, that's America, we were basically bankrupt, okay? And we were fighting the British Empire. And so in 1781, Solomon began working extensively for Robert Morris. Now, Robert Morris was the superintendent for finance of the 13 colonies, okay? Basically, he was the treasurer, the secretary. He was the money man, okay? And then, basically, what happens is he quotes the congressional record of March 25th, 1975, which basically says that in Morris's diary from the years 1781 to 1784, there were at least 75 times where he says, I sent for Chaim Solomon. I go to my go-to man. You know, who are you going to go to at this time, right? I needed money. I needed, it's unbelievable what Chaim Solomon did, the amount of money that he raised for foreign investments to be able to basically fund the Revolutionary War. Okay, so Solomon's fundraising and personal loans, by the way, this is personal money he lent to the government. Bad move, Chaim, you're tzaddik, you're a great guy, but never lend money to the government. Okay, as we're going to see later, the government never repaid him. Okay, but he raised over $650,000 back then, which is over $18 billion. $18 billion in the equivalent. Okay, it is unbelievable what he did. So he raised that money for George Washington and how he did it. Okay, whatever. It's, you know, for those of you who are interested in exactly the financial strategy, you can see how he did it now. Okay. Then there was not just in general the financial help that he gave to the colonials, but there was one specific battle. Listen to this. You ready for this? This is so exciting. You proud to be Jewish? It's great. So in August 1781, the Continental Army was in a decisive battle in Yorktown. They had trapped General Charles Cornwallis in Yorktown. It's a Virginia coastal town. And George Washington and the main army and the French, they decided to go to Yorktown. And basically, this was the final makabapatash of saying Hebrew, the final hammer blow. This was it. There was only one issue. They were totally broke. Washington had zero money. And Congress had zero money. Well, nothing has changed, although we owe a lot. Okay, but literally without food, uniform, supplies, the troops were basically ready for mutiny. And he said he needed at least $20,000 to finance the campaign. So when Morris told him there were no funds or credit available, Washington gave him a simple but eloquent order. Send for Chaim Solomon. And guess what? Chaim came through. He figured it out. He sold bills of exchange. He figured it out. He got $20,000. And that was the final battle of the revolution, funded exclusively by a Jew. Don't hear much about Chaim Solomon, but maybe we should this July 4th. Very impressive. Now, if you think that that's what's really impressive, can I tell you what's even more impressive? Is that Chaim Solomon stayed true to his Judaism. He did not sell out. He didn't water down his Judaism to be accepted by George Washington and all these people. He was a proud Jew. He kept Shabbos. He was a member of the Orthodox congregation Mikveh Yisrael in Philadelphia, which is still there today. Okay, founded in 1740. He helped build the building. And he was essential in helping America and certain states remove these laws that you could only be a Christian in order to serve. And so we see that his impact was great, not only in his lifetime, but beyond. Now, Chaim Solomon, unfortunately, died very young. He died when he was 45, January 8th, 1785. and had tuberculosis. Now, unfortunately, the government and his basically other people who owed him money did not repay the debt that they owed to him. And he died totally impoverished, and his family was left penniless. And there were many attempts to get money from the American government to pay him back. It's basically called theft. Okay, when you don't repay someone that which you steal, that which you borrow, or it's called forgiveness of debt. Okay, either way, whoever you want to take it. Basically, they owed him money. His fourth child, Chaim Jr., met with President John Tyler in the early 1840s and left him some documents, but the box of papers later disappeared. I never knew what to think of John Tyler, but maybe I do now. I don't know. Anyway, basically, they tried over many, many, many years to get any money out of them. Unfortunately, Congress failed again to, it made it through subcommittees, but never paid the Solomons back. However, eventually, there has been some recognition for Chaim Solomon. 1939, a Warner Brothers, I guess that's when you can still watch Warner Brothers movies, had a movie, Sons of Liberty, about him. There were books written about him. And I found out that there's a statue in downtown Chicago with George Washington standing between and clasping the hands of Robert Morris and Chaim Solomon, publicly recognizes the two men whose services were so vital in financing the Revolutionary War. I got to go see that because I'm here in Chicago. There was a stamp done, lots of stuff. Now, there's a famous urban legend. It's not necessarily seen as true, but there, if you look on the back of a dollar bill, there is a Mug and Dovid with 13 stars on it, and many, the apocryphal, I don't know. You make up your own mind. You do your own research. Basically, it was what George Washington's Hakkar Satovi's gratitude to Chaim Solomon for his efforts. He wanted something Jewish on there. Okay, so I think that this is a very beautiful person to highlight on this July 4th as Jews, is because he stayed proud as a Jew and observant as a Jew, and he did not water down who he was. And he was a true Jew and a true patriot. Just like in the Torah, when Joseph ran Egypt, he stayed true to himself, his values, his moral code. And therefore, the DNA that we saw all the way back in Genesis, that Jews would always be helping the local and national and international governments, we see that echoing down to our very country. So God bless on this July 4th. May you stay safe and healthy and happy, and be thankful for America. Be aware of the spiritual challenges of America. And if we take a page from the book of Chaim Solomon's life of staying true to our Jewish identity, we will make a huge impact as Jews and as Americans. God bless. And we'll see you back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.